This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Here we go on a Friday. Happy Friday to you all. Welcome aboard. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Good morning, sir.
Cold.
No kidding.
It's a surprise. It's, you know, almost February and it's cold. I would have thought. I thought spring had come.
Yeah, well, the wishful thinking. I know where you want to be.
No, but it is nice. All kidding aside, the air is clearer, and you can see an enormous distance. And yesterday, you know, I don't mind the cold that much.
Yeah, all right. You've brought a guest with you.
But I will say, this morning, Diana taking the dogs to the park, she looked like the abominable snowman. I've never seen so much clothes to go for an hour in the park.
And did she spend the whole time there?
Every day she goes.
She's
rain,
tough.
Snow.
Dogs weren't thrilled, but then again,
dogs love it. No, I know dogs love cold weather. So.
They don't know. They're dogs. That's why they're dogs. Alan Wernick is with you. He's director of the CUNY Immigration and Citizenship Project. Alan, welcome. Good morning.
Thank you so much.
If you remember, in a State of the City speech a few weeks ago, we said we're actually going to do something to try to help Haitians with their immigration status here, make sure they have this temporary protective status. And we're going to do something this Saturday, tomorrow, at Mega Evers College in central Brooklyn. And Alan is running it. But the idea is to help people be able to get this protective status. And we've got lots of volunteers, experts on immigration law and social services to help.
Why don't you explain what that temporary protection service is?
Temporary protective status. It's given by the Department of Homeland Security to individuals or countries where there's been a natural disaster or war and people are unable to return home as a result. An individual gets the right to stay and work in the United States for 18 months, cannot
be
deported.
They normally would be going back. Is that
normally
correct?
if they're here unlawfully, they would have to go back if they were, you know, picked up by immigration or encountered the immigration service. So under temporary protected status, individuals would be able to remain in the United States unless they have a criminal record or some other reason why they've been ineligible. But for most Haitians, they will be able to remain here for at least 18 months, and it can be extended beyond that. They'll be able to work, get a driver's license, and participate in our society, send money home.
Well, certainly, I think all of us can understand, no matter where you fall on this whole question of people staying or going, but when you've got Haiti and no place to go, and I mean, it makes no sense.
I read an article
home.
In the paper today about a convoy trying to deliver food, and I understand exactly the frustration that the guy that was running the convoy had. You know, roads don't work, there's no security, you can't control crowds. I mean, it is just literally... So it is so easy. You got to be careful not to give up. But Haiti was a place that needed enormous help back in 2004 when I was there, and this just makes it so much worse.
Alan, who's the determinant about the dates and the length and the re-upping of a temporary status like this? I'm thinking down the road now, because it's going to be years before Haiti gets put back together again.
That's right, and it's Department of Homeland Security, the executive branch, so basically it's President Obama who ultimately makes the decision. One thing that I want to say to your listeners is that some people may be afraid because it isn't only an 18-month period, but typically these periods are extended. We have TPS for individuals from Honduras from the 1998 hurricane. So certainly if it was my sister or my mother, I would want her to get TPS because I think it gives people a chance to integrate into society, and you know, they may be able to qualify for permanent residence at some point. Congress may grant permanent residence to Haitians somewhere down the line, so it's certainly a valuable thing, and people should definitely go forward and apply for it. And working with the mayor and his commissioners, the Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs and Department of Youth and Community Development, we're providing free services to individuals at Mega Evers College this Saturday. And it's 100% free. Even the photos are free.
There are 300 people that have volunteered to come tomorrow and help. They are lawyers and paralegals and students who've been training and volunteering to help. And if you want to know where or what, or you want to volunteer, what do you call?
311.
311. That is exactly right. And NYC Service.
How many people, Alan, do you think are eligible for this?
Well, you know, the Immigration Service says between 100,000 to 200,000. I think that might be a little high. I think that... that number is, well, that's my opinion, that's very high. And in the New York area, my personal guess is between 2,500 and 3,000.
Right, because it is a guess.
It's just a guess. Right. We're expecting, you know, 400 or 500 people to be coming out on Saturday and working with the Legal Aid Society. I want to give a shout-out to them. They're one of New York's treasures. And JoJo Annabelle, who's the director of Immigration Unit. And working with the Legal Aid Society and these other organizations I mentioned, as the mayor said, we have over 300 volunteers coming out just to assist attorneys, translators. Some of them are students. Some of them are from major law firms. Some of them have immigration practices, and they've undergone a training, and we're gonna help as many people as we can. We have another event scheduled the following week in the same area, so if people don't get serviced on Saturday, they'll have another opportunity.
How is your Creole? If it's good, you can volunteer.
Creole, no, my Creole is not very good. My English isn't very good.
I have the same problem. My high school French does not carry me through a Creole conversation, although I understand some words, but it's dangerous. Actually, all kidding aside, if somebody wants to help, another way you can do it is by giving money to the Mayor's Fund to advance New York City. And so far, we've received like something like $1.2 million from 3,400 different donors. And we started a program that Christine Quinn really deserves the credit for, I think, to let city workers check off and make a contribution through their annual or their paychecks. And that hasn't started to kick in yet. That's not money.
It starts next week, I believe.
Yeah, I think, the money's not included in this. So that's another way you can do it. And then later this morning, the governor and I are opening something called the Haiti Resource Center. And it's another way we're trying to help the Haitian community. But, you know, there's 125,000 people of Haitian descent in the city. And we do the same thing no matter which group. Haiti is a little bit easier because it's close. If something were to happen, you know, in Asia, it's so far away to get resources there. But this is a poor country that has no infrastructure, had no infrastructure really before, and now an awful lot less. And I think the real problem here is how do you keep helping going forward? Because if you remember, there was a big hurricane in Haiti, a lot of mudslides, a lot of deaths, and the world forgot about it. So we do that, whether it's Haiti or any place else. We get back to our own views, our own interests very quickly, and these countries need long-term help. And if you did it, you wouldn't have these disasters, or at least the carnage
would be mitigated.
And you'd have an infrastructure. And long-term, it'd probably save you a lot of money. And it'd certainly be much more compassionate if people had the courage to stand there and do. Doesn't have to be as much, but just consistency.
It's going to be fascinating to look back on this tragedy and see how the world designs, finances, and rebuilds, or not, depending on what ultimately happens. But there's huge opportunity here for the Haitians.
Well, you know, the trouble is in Haiti, the government is so unstable. I was down there in 2004, and I said, well, why don't we just send down a backhoe and a big dump truck, and you could clean up the trash? Because down every street, there's this pile, at least it was, you know, a couple, 2 or 3 feet high and 6 feet wide, all the way down.
You would think a bulldozer would take care of it.
And, you know, it's part the old government, Aristide's government, I think it was, they've been pushed out. They don't want you to do it, so they take shots at the people. And the UN provides peacekeeping. The Brazilians were the actual troops on the ground when I was there. But I talked to some of those guys, and I said, it's really scary. This is a country that needs help, and it needs a stable government, and it needs an education system. The police department here, for example, disappeared after the earthquake. Now, you know, what do you do? Think about it. We take for granted the fact that we're safe in the city and in this country. People there are not, and we've got to find some ways to help them. And we can all complain about it, yep, but you got to do it.
All right, Medgar Evers College, Brooklyn, 11 to 5 tomorrow. Alan, good luck.
Thank you so much.
All right, good to see you. Thanks for coming in this morning. Let me take a break right here. A short one it will be. Don't forget.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike, News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
20 after 8 o'clock, 800-321-0710. If you got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, I do.
Okay. That's why I'm here.
Why did you really call the president yesterday and tell him that the 9/11 trial is a really bad idea?
I did not talk to the president yesterday. I talked to some other people in the administration at a high level. And I just pointed out, look, if this is the federal government's call, plain and simple. They decide what kind of a trial, and they decide where. Attorney General Holder called me back 2 months ago when all this started and said, you know, we're going to do it in New York. Can you provide security? I talked to our police commissioner, and yes, the answer is, you know, we have the best police department in the world, and if called on, we will step to the plate and provide the kind of security that is needed. I pointed out again yesterday, however, it is very expensive, and we expect Washington to pay for it. But keep in mind, Washington is you and me and everybody else in this country. When we say, oh, it's just what is government, it's Washington's money. No, it's our money. 330 million of us, it's our money. I said it'd be phenomenally expensive. And it is very disruptive to people who live in the area and businesses in the area, so that the economic impact is detrimental, and nobody knows how big. And it would be better to do it elsewhere if they could find a venue. It's not my job to tell them what kind of a trial. I'm not a legal expert in any case. But, you know, if called on, we'll help them. And I will say, I think they're trying. They understand, and they're trying to do something. It's just there's no easy answers to any of this.
Are you suggesting that the decision has not been made, that it could still very well be at the federal courthouse across the street?
I can tell you this. The president did not call me and say, Mike, this is what we're doing. And I'd say, Barack, thanks. No, we didn't have that conversation.
Because Chuck Schumer, Senator Schumer, indicated that his call to the White House yesterday.
I don't know what Chuck's calls are. I just worry about my own. you know, I think they understand and they're trying to do something. And, you know, it's their call and they will make announcements. And I'm not here to second guess them. I will be as supportive as and the city will be as we can. Period. I can tell you, I would prefer if it was done elsewhere. I think some of the suggestions make sense, like a military base, because it's far away from other people and you can provide security easily. And yes, it's a little bit of longer ride for a jury and a judge, but there's nothing easy, and you have to make some compromises someplace. Some people suggested Governor's Island. That's not practicable. It would cost more and probably be more disruptive in the end than doing it in downtown, where the prisoners would be in a federal jail, go underground into a federal courthouse and never leave. And we even have a hospital there if they needed medical care, and they'd never leave the building. So that makes it easier to provide the kind of security we want. Governor's Island would be a nightmare back and forth, and we don't have any facilities. It'd take years to build them. There's all sorts of environmental things. You just don't go build in this day and age. So that's not practical, but a military base would be. But it's up to the federal government, and we will support them, not try to second-guess them.
All right, well, let's second-guess here. Let's second-guess.
That was a great segue.
What do you make of the politics of this, of the change of heart, of the change of direction? The actual words from some people's mouths that, you know, it's a bad idea today, it was not a bad idea yesterday.
You know, we all sit here, and anytime somebody decides something, and later on there are more facts or a chance to reconsider, and if they change, we say, oh, flip-flop, that's bad. I always thought that if you get more information and you think about it more and there's a better idea and you change, you're my kind of guy. I wouldn't want somebody running my company. I wouldn't want to live with somebody or work for somebody that was so inflexible that they were worried about the flip-flop thing. And the journalists just create that. They want to create a controversy. But and I don't know what forget about the facts in this case, whether they're new ones or whether they change. But if they change, to me, it's a sign of maturity and strength and intellect, that if somebody comes up with a better idea or if the world changes, you change. I know tomorrow the papers are going to write, you know, oh, he likes flip-floppers. No, I like people who aren't ideological or that's not the right word, aren't dug in, so dug in that they can't change.
Okay, no good answer. All right, I agree. I mean, I understand. Yeah, I am thrilled.
Would you want if Wendy said, I'm going to serve fish for dinner, and you said, I don't like fish, and she'd say, well, tough luck, I've already made the decision. No.
You've been there, haven't you?
Yes.
That's what she does say. Tough luck. That's too bad.
Sorry about that.
All right. I am through. I have been, we have been here at this radio station, along with others, absolutely as shouting as loud as we can possibly, right from November 11th when it was announced that this was a bad idea. I am thrilled, no matter what the cause of the result, that we are moving in this direction. I think it's a good thing to move it out.
I couldn't agree. But also, let's get serious. There is no good answer. There's all of these problems. If there were easy answers, they would have been fixed a long time ago to these problems. And so I'm always sympathetic to the person in the ring, in the arena, who has to make a real decision. There's no matter what you do, people are going to criticize you. And all of the people in the stands around, my eyes just glaze over. You know, easy to take pot shots, easy to criticize others. A lot tougher to do things. And look, I don't agree with President Obama on a lot of things, but he's trying. And some of the things I agree with, and he's done some good things. And like anybody else, he'll have his failures, and it's a long time to go in his administration. And, you know, what I find fascinating is some people want him to fail. I think Rush Limbaugh was told, said that. I mean, think about it. You want the president, which means the country, which means you and me and our kids to fail? What kind of craziness is that? I can understand the last year of a term when you're running against somebody and you say, I've got a better ways to do it. But I just find this whole thing sick. We should all pull together, both sides of the aisle, legislative, executive branch, state, city, federal, and make this country work. And this, we're whipping ourselves. I don't like this idea of us criticizing industries and pulling those apart. This is our future. We want everybody to be successful. This is not a zero-sum game. The tide lifts all boats. And as somebody said, when the tide goes out, you find out who wasn't wearing a bathing suit. And,
I shift gears real fast here. World Trade Center, there was arbitration between Silverstein and Port Authority. I gather they've come to some sort of agreement.
Bob Lieber is the guy, is my guy. He's our deputy mayor for economic development and reconstruction. Been working very hard. We said we were going to try to do something. This was maybe 6 months ago. In the context of the kind of the magnitude of this problem, 6 months, a short time, they are making progress. Will we get there? I only hope so. You've got the Port Authority and the city and the state, two state governments.
Are you feeling better about the project than you did six months ago?
Yeah, as a matter of fact,
ago?
I'm coming down Broadway today and there's, you know, Deutsche Bank
coming up.
Deutsche Bank building is halfway down, and steel is going up, and the memorial is on budget, on time. There's a lot of great things happening. A couple thousand people working down there. Should have, would have, and could have. Even in looking back on this, I'm not so sure you could have done this that much quicker. There's just so many moving parts. They're all interrelated. There's so many conflicting interests. We have had four different New Jersey governors and three different New York State governors who control the Port Authority. Together, we've had seven different governors in the last 8 years since I came into office to work with. And every time you change a governor, things sort of slow down while they get their own people in there and figure out what they want to do. Given that, given the crash in the real estate market or decline, whatever, however you want to define it, so that you can't easily rent buildings or can't get commercial loans as easily as you could, and we're still going.
Speaking of real estate, will there be any impact on the changing of hands financially with Stuyvesant?
I think from a practical point of view for people living there. No, Tishman Speyer is a good company. Everybody that lives in Tishman Speyer properties that I've ever talked to said they do a great job in managing it, and whoever's going to manage it hopefully will do a good job as well.
But again, the financial losses or gains irrelevant to the city or not?
Not good for the city because you want to have people come here and make money and be willing to invest more. There's a lot of money lost in this. The bottom line is Tishman Speyer led a group. Lots of different people, investors in it. They bought what turned out to be at the top of the market. And today, a $5 billion thing's worth $2 billion, $1.5 billion, whatever the number is. And then the courts made a decision which nobody in government or real estate had ever expected they would do. And that changed the economics of owning the complex. So, you know, just they're dealing with it.
All right.
But if you live there,
It shouldn't make any difference. Yeah. All right. Mayor Michael Bloomberg's dealing with a budget that he announced yesterday. We will talk about it as we continue here on the John Gambling Show on a Friday, 8:30. Here's Joe Bartlett. We got some folks hanging on that line, 800-321-0710, a couple of open lines as well. You got to get through Mike to get on with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We will do that in a very few moments. All right, Mr. Mayor, budget you put together. I know you didn't want it to turn out the way it did.
Well, the economy has slowed down, and our tax revenues are lower, and more people need our services. Surprise, surprise.
$63 billion. What was last year's?
It's about the same. Yeah, it varies a little bit. Keep in mind, that's a little bit misleading because our tax revenues, city tax revenues, are about 44. And then we get some aid from the state. And then there's some pass-throughs for federal monies for social programs that we administer. So there's no easy answer to what's the budget and that sort of thing. Back in 07, we said that the economy can't keep chugging along at this rate. It was just craziness. And we started to save. We prepaid a few billion dollars in interest. We started funding a liability we have for city retirees' health services. We've had 7 and now 8 programs of going to each agency and said, you got to find ways to do more with less. Your budget's going to go down. People say, well, if your budget keeps going down, why does the total you spend go up? Well, that's partly because of labor settlements. And people say, oh, you're paying too much. But if you want to have good people, you got to pay as you can't always pay as much as you'd like or as you think is fair or you think that is you need to be competitive, because the reality is the taxpayers only have so much money that they're willing to pay. But on balance, the reason this city has done well is we have a great labor force and we all work well together, and nobody ever makes as much money as they want, and the taxpayer always spends more than they'd like to. But just think about this. Crime, record low since we ever started keeping records. Deaths by fire, record low since we ever started keeping records. This past week, we announced traffic deaths, record low since we started keeping records back in, I think it was 1910. People need help.
What do you attribute the rise of pedestrian deaths? What do your people tell you about why that might be?
A lot of it is this population of the city is growing and more seniors. And seniors are much more vulnerable to traffic deaths. I can testify from firsthand experience, you were too young to remember to know this, but you slow down, your reactions, your eyesight, your hearing, all of which are, you know, not quite as spiffy as they might have been or used to be. But, you know, it's a small number. Mm-hmm. We're working very hard. DWI is a lot of the traffic. Pedestrian fatalities typically, but a lot of them come out of driving while intoxicated, accidents or... I don't know how you call it an accident. It seems to me it's almost deliberate. You got to be really irresponsible to drink and drive. You can kill somebody, and unfortunately, a lot of people do. But the city is, on balance, doing well. Our tourism is only down a few percent, whereas in the rest of the country, it's down 50%. There are more people working in tourism today than ever before. More hotel rooms than ever before.
This budget does not take into account actual dollars that you might not get from the state, correct? Because they don't have a budget.
Well, we don't know what the state's going to do. The governor proposes a budget. The state takes it up. Our budget, what I have to do in January is give a preliminary budget saying, if we started today, this is what we do. And then in June, we have to, with the city council, pass a budget. By that time, hopefully, we will know what the state does. But the state budget's hard to incorporate in our thinking, in our planning, things that the state would do. For example, let's assume we said, okay, they're going to cut us, and we'll accept that. Well, then they'll for sure do it. So, you know, it's like negotiating. If you say, well, here's what we're likely to do, that's the negotiating starting point and not where you wind up. So what we're doing is we said we have a balanced budget with no new taxes and maintaining essential services. And I think we can find some money for our municipal workforce in terms of increases in salary to keep up with a small rate of inflation, but it's going to have to come out of savings and Tier 5 pension and health care benefits and productivity enhancements. And we will be able to keep most of the people that have worked so hard to make the city good employed. But you're right, it doesn't include the governor's budget. Now, I then published a second book saying, here, if the governor's budget were passed the way it is now, this is what would happen. And it's very serious. They would cut $1.3 billion from us in a world where we just cut $1.5 billion in expenses and our tax revenues down $2 or $3 billion from the last year. And so it would result in 19-odd thousand layoffs, 8,500 teachers and cops and firefighters. And say, is that what's going to happen? Well, call your state assembly person and senator. And one of the scary things is they have been acting fiscally, I've never used the word irresponsibly, fiscally aggressively would be a nicer way to phrase it, assuming that things will be better than they are. The reason we have more tax revenues than we had budgeted was we budgeted very conservatively, which I think you should do because you want to protect against the worst case. I know how to deal with the best case. It's the worst case I always worry about. They assumed the best case, and it turned out not to be the best case. So all of a sudden, they found a $3 billion deficit in their last budget. They plugged that supposedly about a month and a half ago. Now they're talking about the next budget, and they say they've got an $8 billion deficit. And the fiscal watchdogs say next year, the year after, they've got a $14 billion deficit, and the year after, a $20 billion deficit. So if you're worried about the effect of the state budget on New York City for this year, I don't know what's going through your mind about the next two. And that's what I'm really petrified about. I want to make sure we have our life preservers ready just in case.
The teachers, you've said that they should accept a 2% rather than the 4% raise that was negotiated. Otherwise, you're cutting, 2,500 positions, or would have to cut 2,500
I have
positions.
To. I mean, that's just, look, there isn't an... Somebody said to me, well, does this mean you don't have any more money for any money for raises for the municipal workforce? And I said, miss, we don't have money for the existing workforce at the current levels. And I'm trying to find some ways to solve that problem. But it's going to take a change in expectations and views. And, you know, the 2% raise instead of a 4% raise, that is what the non-union people in the Department of Education got about 2 months ago, and our school construction authority people, and they say, well, I'd like more. I wish we could pay you more, but it's, at least it's some raise. And, you know, nobody's a bigger believer in education than me, as you know, and I want to make sure our teachers are as well paid as we can do it. But the reality is you can only do some. I would like to protect all of the teachers. I think if we give a 2% raise, we can keep all our existing teachers. If we were to give a 4% raise, we would have to give lose attrition or layoffs 2,500 teachers. If the governor's budget was to be enacted, we'd probably have to lay off another 8,500. Now you're talking about 10,000-11,000 teachers. That's a big deal.
It's a very big deal. And at what point does it start to affect program, not just in schools, but when you cut the firehouses and police and,
well,
and
the
sanitation?
I keep saying this, that the job of each commissioner is to do a great job with the resources that we allocate to them, that we have available. And in terms of allocation, there's no easy choices, and we'll set our priorities and do that, and we'll work with the city council who has a final vote on the budget. But, you know, everyone, I was joking with a few of the new city council people who just came into office. And, you know, I said, now, which do you want? A, to have one more cop, firefighter, teacher. Oh, no, I want all three. Well, you can't have all three. And just getting their minds around that, that's what's different. But I really do think that we can get through this, that we're going to need help from Albany and not making... Albany, I'm sympathetic, they have a problem. But the way the governor's budget addresses it, it's very unfair to New York City. For example, there's a program called revenue sharing, and it's a little bit misleading because of the sizes of the money. But they cut 57 counties between 2 and 5%. They cut 5 counties, and those counties being Bronx County, Queens County, Kings County, Richmond County, and New York County. 100%.
That's because that's where the money is, and that's where they can get it.
That is true, because if you add up all of the revenue sharing for all of the 57, New York is still 15 times the total. So it's, but having said that, there are other ways they move monies to other counties, and New York City pays a disproportionate percentage of the revenue. And when we don't get it back, people say, well, you're wealthy. Well, we may be where a lot of the money is, but that's where we're paying it in taxes. And we also are a magnet. We have more kids who don't speak English and more special ed kids and more lots of other programs. And we are the economic engine of the state. So we have to invest and have our streets cleaner and safer perhaps than any place else. Otherwise, we're not going to have a tourist, in which case we're not going to have the money to send to Albany. So, you know, you can say, well, it's not fair. That's the reality.
All right. Emotional, especially to those children and families whose schools were closed this week or announced that
No. That's a misnomer. We have to use the word closed. We didn't close any schools. Most of these schools will open the next day in the same building with the same kids. The only difference is we're going to have new management and new teachers.
But, why do you call it closed? Or why do
because
you have to
legally,
call it
legally, that's what you have to do to qualify for some of the federal monies. But that this is just so ridiculous. That nostalgia. Well, I went to the school 30 years ago. It's good. Yeah, but we have 2,000 kids in that school and not getting an education. We're not going to let those kids go one more day. If the teachers, most, not all of them in every school, some are great, some aren't, or the management, meaning the principals, if they can't make those schools function, we're going to change the management and change the teachers. And in fact, four or so of those of the 19 schools are schools that we started 3 or 4 years ago. If they're not working, we're not going to sit here just because we started them as opposed to somebody else. We are not going to deny kids in this city a good education.
To the average person, it would seem that if you've got a business, and schools are businesses, and you've got a management that isn't producing the numbers at the bottom line, you change that person.
We're doing it.
I understand. I'm just curious as to why you have to go through this sort of jump through hoops to close it.
It's called democracy. Because the law that gave the mayor control of the school system said you have to have this panel of educational policy. The mayor appoints, I think it's 8, and each of the borough presidents appoint 1. And they had a hearing till 3:30 in the morning, and they listened to everybody. And those that I talked to, all the votes were like 9-4. Don't ask me why the 4. You have to go talk to the borough presidents why they wanted to keep open failing schools. That's their answer. The guy from Staten Island, Jim Molinaro, his guy basically voted with us. He doesn't want bad schools in Staten Island. In Staten Island today, the schools are so much better than they were 8 years ago. It's a dramatic improvement. But the answer to your question is when you talk to these people, they said, we listen to a lot of noise and a lot of people talking, but nostalgia is not a reason to keep a school open. The fact that, well, they're trying is not a reason to keep the school open or to open in the sense of the way it was. And the changing is the right thing to do, and that's what we're going to do.
All right. I understand more because you anticipated my question. I said, what happens when you close these things? Because the word close to me is you close the doors and don't let people in.
But no, that's anything but.
Very good. Glad to hear it. Hang on, Mr. Mayor. We're going to open the phones next, 800-321-0. Six minutes before 9 o'clock, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and now it is your turn. Mr. Mayor, we're going to start with line 1, and I got Rob on the phone. Right to the question. Rob, good morning.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, first of all, honor, and I would vote for you for a fourth time if I had the opportunity.
You won't, but thank you.
But I know that. But I want to talk to you about an issue that I think you would be near and dear to your heart, and I think you could actually make a big difference, and that's changing, working with a nutritionist and actually improving the quality of the school lunches for the children. I mean, you know the problems with obesity and kids and health problems.
Couldn't agree more. You're 100% right. An enormous number of our kids are overweight, some are actually obese, and a lot of the overweight kids will become obese as they get older. What we do is we have a nutritionist that works for the schools. We're trying to get the food to have less salt and fewer calories. I don't know if you saw an article in the paper today, but skim milk rather than full milk, calorie milk, however you describe it, has done made a big difference, and we'll continue to do that. One of the problems is as the kids get older, if they don't like the food, they go out, leave the school, go to McDonald's, and so
eat,
you know,
pizza.
Yeah, right. I mean, you got to be careful. It's you got to have stuff that they're willing to eat, at the same time making it healthier. But you're right on, Rob. It is a very big problem, and we're trying to do something about it.
All right, I got Annie on number two here. Hello, Annie. Get to right to the question, please.
Okay. Hi, Don, and thank you. Mayor Bloomberg, it's an honor. And I just want to profoundly thank you for having had a change of heart. And my instincts always inform me that you're very strong and independent, and I always feel safe with you. And by the way, this is a great example of a successful failure of a very bad Obama idea. And I think more or less this is what Rush meant by
failed and successful to us. I'm not an expert. I don't know what kind of trial they should have. It's up to the federal government. We've said if they have it here, we will support it. We will provide the security. I don't think I've ever expressed a view as to where it should be or where it shouldn't be. My job is to, if the federal government has a right to do it and wants to do it here, we're going to make sure that they get taken care of. I will say that it would be easier for the people of New York if it was elsewhere's. And hopefully from the perspective of the country of having increasing our security, they'll do the right thing. So we'll see what happens. But anyways, thank you for your
Annie,
call, and
thank
hopefully it'll change.
Lorraine, you've got the mayor. Go.
Hello?
Yes,
hi.
You're on. Go,
hi,
Lorraine.
Mr. Mayor. I was wondering, I understand that every state and city has budget problems, but why are we giving $31 million to Ratner for Atlantic Yards if we have issues? I know $31 million won't solve the city's problems, but do you think it's necessary? He's a private developer.
Well, the Atlantic Yards is being done, you're exactly right, Lorraine, is being done by a private developer. It is something that really is very good for Brooklyn and for the city. It will create a lot of jobs. It will give us another venue to have big events here, which help tourism and give the people of New York City places to go and to be entertained, and they'll love it. The city is not funding it. The city gives some money to every big project for infrastructure kinds of things, and we do some remediation of some environmental stuff, and we try to provide some seed money from the Economic Development Corporation if, in fact, the project's going to create jobs and housing and businesses and the kinds of things we want. The Atlantic Yards project is moving along very slowly. It started out in a much different economic climate, and now that the developer has to sort of adjust to a different world. But we're not, we do some investments on the private side to help to attract private money. We did some investments, for example, in the Citi Field, the new Shea Stadium, and in the new Yankee Stadium for infrastructure, meaning parks and transportation. And in return, private developers in both cases, the Mets put in something like $800 million. The Yankees, I'm told, it was like $1.2 billion. All that money created jobs and created things we needed. So, we're trying to be responsible, and it's a balance. We're not here to provide money for developers, private developers. They should do it themselves. But having said that, the real world is we have to help a little bit.
All right, Lorraine, let me go to Bill. Bill, I have only seconds left. Go.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I think you're one of the best mayors we've ever had in New York, and even though I'm a New Jersey
resident. So does my mother, and
Bill,
she comes from New Jersey.
Bill, what's your question, please?
My question is that we talked about Haiti earlier. There's 9,536,000 people in Haiti. I think we're somewhere around over $500,000 per person right now, money that has been used.
All right, what's the question, Bill, because I'm going to have to cut you off.
My question is are we responsible to bring their infrastructure up to the 21st century?
We're running out of time, but the truth of the matter is we haven't even thought about their infrastructure. All the money that's going into Haiti today is to try to get people out from under rubble, recover bodies and feed them and give them water and some medical care. This is a disaster that we're just at the very beginning, and you can talk about what we should do down the road in terms of infrastructure. If they'd had better infrastructure, it would have been a lot less of a problem, but right now we're at the rescue and preservation of life level, and they're just society's going to help them.
All right, the clock has run out for us once again, Mr. Mayor, and we'll do it again next Friday. Always great to see you. That's going to do it for me and the rest of the John Gambling crew. Have a great weekend, everybody.